Individuals experiencing both vision and hearing loss have unique challenges, but they also provide unique opportunities for us to learn with and from our hearing experts. In today's episode, we are talking with Dr. Amber Kaysen, who is going to share with us how she's come about into the world of working with people who have both visual and hearing impairments, and her philosophies on social isolation, why it's so important to get people to be more connected with their community, and how she is working to make that happen. If you've ever been curious about what it looks like from the audiologist appointment to real life, especially when working with learners with visual and multiple impairments, you definitely don't want to miss this episode.
Welcome to A Step Forward, a podcast for ambitious VI specialists who are challenging the status quo. I'm Cassie Maloney, your new work bestie. With over 15 years of experience as an O&M specialist, author, professional development junkie, mom, and owner of Allied Independence, I have been through the ringer. And now I'm here to bring you a boost of inspiration, information, and our favorite, innovation, as we trade feeling overwhelmed for overjoyed while we create a significant impact in the lives of our learners and still lead more balanced, fulfilling lives. So grab your favorite beverage because we're about to take a step forward.
Welcome back to the podcast, my friend. Today's episode is really special because we get to hear from somebody who is not an orientation and mobility specialist. And I got to hear a little bit about what it looks like on the other side. You know, we as orientation and mobility specialists or VI specialists, we know what our professional responsibilities are, what our day-to-day looks like, but I wasn't 100% sure what Amber's looked like. So it was really cool to be able to get to sit down and chat with her about that. She has been at the Department of Veterans Affairs for over 5 years, including an internship at the Jesse Brown VA in Chicago and an externship at the James A. Haley VA in Tampa, Florida, while she was getting her Doctor of Audiology from Northwestern University. And now she's in her permanent position as a clinical audiologist and vestibular program manager at the Tibor Rubin VA in Long Beach, California. Between her externship and coming back to the VA, she was the associate director of amplification at a private practice in Newport Beach, California, where she ran the hearing aids and tinnitus program. While at the Long Beach VA, she's led the tinnitus program since 2019 and inpatient and externship programs since 2021. She is their group's resident expert in growing programs from the ground up. She is also part of the ethics team at Long Beach VA and the VHA leadership coaching program. Overall, this woman does so much and knows so much and really helped me to see what the VA can do, you know? Can't wait for you to get to know Amber. Let's get to the show.
Hi, Amber. Welcome to the podcast. I'm so glad that you are here. Would you like to start by telling our community a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am Amber, obviously, and I am an audiologist at the Tibor Rubin VA in Long Beach, California. I'm a doctor of audiology. I graduated with my doctorate from Northwestern in 2017. I started grad school because I love the VA and I wanted to work at the VA. So it's been my goal since before I even, you know, started that journey. I did an internship at the Jesse Brown VA in Chicago, my externship at the Tampa VA in Tampa, Florida. And then I did work in a private practice for a year and a half. I was the associate director of amplification there. And then I came back to the VA as soon as I could because I love the VA so much. And now I'm the vestibular lead at this particular VA. But I do a lot here. I also work with patients with tinnitus. I do inpatient work, which is how I got involved with blind rehab and vision impaired patients. And I also do a lot of teaching. So I'm all around. I'm everywhere.
That's such a cool backstory. So when you were in college, how did you even find out about working for a VA?
Well, It actually started with my undergraduate. I have a certificate in service learning. So we had to do a lot of activities in the community and volunteering and things like that, and just making sure that we understood how to basically work in like the nonprofit sector. And the VA is a huge nonprofit for the healthcare system in general. So there was that. And then I actually took a year off after my undergraduate because I... Long story short, I spent an extra year to do the whole degree in 1 year because I switched my senior year after I fell in love with communication sciences and disorders. So I was working full time. I was taking an entire degree's worth of classes in 1 year. And then I just needed a break. So I took a year off and I was an audiology aide for a year, working at an ENT practice, and the lead audiologist there, her friend was a VA audiologist. And so she knew that VA patients, anyone who's eligible for VA services is also eligible for VA hearing aids. So we can get them hearing aids, accessories, and all of that. Things that typically cost $8,000 to $10,000, they get for free. And everyone who's eligible for VA services is eligible for that. And I thought that was so cool that I wouldn't have to sell anything. I would be able to get people whatever they wanted. I'd be able to do what's best for patients, regardless of, you know, their income or their ability to pay. And also, the VA has such a great outreach. We have, you know, community-based outpatient clinics in smaller communities. So even people who are far away from their main VA can still get audiology services. They're even starting to do things like mobile audiology vans so that they can take them to patients who can't get in. And they're doing telehealth audiology. So they'll have patients go into really remote areas and do a audio in those remote areas with the audiologist in, you know, many, many, many miles away doing it remotely with just a technician, you know, putting headphones in, showing them how to push buttons and things like that.
Wow. Even in the field of orientation and mobility, we sometimes think of the VA as like helpful, but I didn't realize how many programs y'all have. Yeah. That's incredible.
I think the hardest part about the VA is the breadth of what is available. So like a lot of people don't know about a lot of different things because there's so many different things that are available. And it's hard to get the word out about one thing because there's, you know, 10 other things that are equally as cool. It's just hard to advertise all of that.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally see that. So tell me a little bit more about how you got into working with people with dual sensory loss.
So I'm at the Long Beach VA. I actually moved to a community-based outpatient clinic during COVID. My daughter was born in March of 2020. So I didn't want to be at the main hospital. She was a NICU baby. And so it was really tough for me to justify going into a hospital every day and bringing, you know, whatever was in the hospital home to her. So during COVID, I was basically removed. And then I think it was about January 2021-ish, maybe a little bit later, maybe March or April, I came back to the Long Beach VA because I was wanting more variety. I wanted to see a lot of different types of patients. And when I came back, I took over the inpatient program. And, you know, in my mind, I was going to be going to like the nursing home area or the people up in the tower in the ICU and just doing bare minimum there. But actually, a lot of what we were doing was with blind rehab. And so we would go over, we would, you know, go to each person's room individual. It looks like a little house. Their rooms are very cozy. They have like chairs and TVs and dressers and a nice bed that looks like a bed you would have at home and recliners and all of that. And I was like, well, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. It is just like a home away from home for these people. And right outside of their window are little gardens, and you can see like they have like an outdoor area to help them learn how to navigate through, you know, like sidewalks and traffic and parks and things like that. And it was just so interesting and so cool. The patients are so happy to be here all the time. It's like the Disneyland of the VA. Like every time you go over there, everyone's in such a good mood. The nurses are always happy. They're always helpful. They want to learn and they just want what's best for the patient. And I was like, well, this place is great. I'll come here any day.
Yeah, right. The rehab centers can be so nice in that they're really great places for people with visual impairments to become a better version of themselves.
Yeah.
You know, and because people live there, it really dives into the identity level and helps them to restore that individualism and that independence as well. Because you remember moving away for college, like that was a big deal. Yeah. And then when people move away to a rehab center and they're either going through a new vision loss or they're just older and they're getting new skills, it's like, it's hard, you know, but also being able to expand who they are.
Can you tell me how your work with those veterans who have dual sensory loss has really shaped, you know, where you are right now?
What we typically experience in audiology is a patient who comes in, doesn't want hearing aids, doesn't really want to be here, is just telling us that their significant other is noticing that they're having trouble and they're making them come in and they're just doing this to placate somebody else. So it has been so refreshing going back at basically to like the roots of audiology where, you know, we're carrying our stuff over and, you know, we're making creative decisions to make the room quieter or make it easier for them to, you know, make decisions. We're looking at technology that's made for people who only have hearing loss and figuring out how to make it work for someone who has that dual sensory impairment. So their motivation to do well with, you know, what they've got makes it so much easier for me to come up with creative solutions for everyone, not just, you know, patients with dual sensory impairment, but that, you know, joy de vivre of these, you know, blind rehab patients has really made it easy for me to look at every patient a little bit differently. So instead of, you know, going by the book, like this is what we learned in school, this is what we do, you know, this is what we've always done, so this is what we're going to continue to do forever. That's not really, you know, how I look at things anymore, because not everything works for everyone, regardless of whether they have dual sensory impairment or they're, you know, simply just hearing loss or even simply just dizzy, because, you know, we see a lot of different kinds of patients in audiology. It's not just, oh, we look at hearing and then that's it. Because, you know, we cover the whole gamut of the ear, whether it's hearing, balance, sensory integration. We see a lot of TBI patients. So it's really changed my outlook on everyone, not just dual sensory impairment.
And that's, you know, what we do is we take what's out there and we modify it for each individual person. And it's so cool that you're also having these experiences and this expertise on your end. For us as orientation and mobility specialists, I love when I get to work with the audiologist or the eye doctor or the whoever it is in the medical field, or even the, you know, the traffic engineers, because we're all looking at the same thing, but we have such a different perspective on it that when we can come together, we can really learn from one another and we can really look at how that perspective can help enhance what we are doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think another thing about it that's really changed my perspective is the attitude of the nursing staff and everyone who's there, because, you know, a lot of times you'll go up to like the medical floor and the nursing staff is like, I can't be bothered with this. I'm not going to learn how to, you know, do all of this because this person's going to be gone in a day and I'm never going to use that again. But when we go over and we talk to that nursing staff, they're like, show me how to change the battery. Show me how to change the wax guard. Show me how, you know, to put it on an ear. Show me how to use that accessory. And it's just really nice to know that there are people who want to collaborate and there are people who want to learn how to help their patients better. So it has made it easier for me to tell other providers, you know, like other providers in the hospital are doing these for their patients. Would you like me to show you how to do that so that, you know, you can do this for them without having to call us over and wait, you know, the day or two before we can clear our schedules to get over here? The confidence that they have has rubbed off on me to give to other people.
You know, and reading your description from your presentation application, you also mentioned that individuals experiencing both hearing and vision loss offer a unique opportunity for collaboration between vision and hearing experts. What has been one of the, I guess, best experiences that you've had with collaborating with the vision experts?
So one thing that I really loved was I was giving a presentation to our Long Beach blind rehab crew. There were, you know, a whole bunch of people there. And at the end, I asked them, you know, for questions, and they gave me so much feedback about how, you know, their hearing aids have been working on their patients, how the apps have been working, what the little, you know, quirks are here and there. And it is so nice to hear somebody else's perspective, because I don't do that with the patients. I don't use a lot of the native iPhone, you know, accessibility app. So I don't know all these things that have been going wrong. But VA Audiology has an incredible relationship with the manufacturers. And so we can, you know, take that information and send it to them, and they can give that directly to their app developers, give that directly to their research people, and implement that in future, you know, devices. Because one of the things that we had, you know, discussed with some of the staff over there were that the accessories are really difficult for patients to figure out how to use, because the only way they could tell what program they were in was through a tiny little light on the accessory itself. Mm-hmm. And I told the manufacturer, I was like, this is not helpful. These people can't use this. They can't see it. They're not confident what program they're in. And there's no indication of what they're doing other than this tiny little light that is like a half shade different color than the next light. So we talked about incorporating voice, you know, notifications. And we've seen that in a hearing aid recently, that they, you know, added a voice option for letting the patients know that the program has changed, instead of just, you know, this beep, this beep, this beep, this light, this light, this light. It is very clear. It's saying, you know, battery is low, or, you know, things like that. And it's really helpful. And they just don't know what they don't know, essentially. And we don't know what we don't know.
Yeah, well, exactly. And then, oh my gosh, the collaboration between VA and audiologist, and then taking it to the manufacturer, that is so clutch, because then that way the learners or the clients can get exactly what they need, but not only for those people, but all across the board, you know, people with visual impairments, because that one person was not the only one experiencing that.
True, true. I think that we have this very unique relationship where we can tell you guys, you know, this is what we have to offer. Does anything make sense to you? I don't know. This sounds like it might be a good thing. This sounds like it might not be. But I'm going to leave that up to you, because you're the vision expert. And you tell me what you think that this person's unique situation would, you know, benefit from. Would they benefit from giant boxes where it's easy for them to feel where everything is? Or is it better for them to have, you know, a tactile little post where they can feel that's exactly where the piece is supposed to be? Or should they have large, you know, red and blue indicators to make it easy for them to see which side it goes on? All of these things are things that, you know, we can offer and we know exist. We just don't know what works best for each person's individual case, because we're not really, you know, well-versed on what different vision, you know, issues look like or manifest as, or what they're going to need.
Exactly. So from your perspective, you know, I know at the presentation at the symposium, you'll talk about what the considerations would be, but why do we even really need to be paying attention to these things?
So what I think is the most important aspect of care for these individuals is making sure that they stay connected to the community. Because one of the biggest indicators for cognitive decline is social isolation. And we need to be watching for the signs and warnings. And one of the biggest is hearing loss. And another one is being stuck at home, lack of transportation. So it's really important that we can address those multiple things. You know, there are a lot of hearing accommodations for transportation places like the airport or like train stations. So even though someone with vision loss may not be able to use, a passenger vehicle at their will, they can use buses, they can use trains, they can use the airport and sort of lock into the communication accessibility options there, like a telecoil, which is something that connects to a hearing aid to give them a clearer signal. Because a lot of our signals are lost from distance or noise. So if they can get that to connect straight to their hearing aid, they're going to get a much clearer picture of where they are and what bus are they getting on? What train are they getting on? What, gate do they need to get to? And it just helps them, get out into their community, get out to see their family, become more active, feel more confident in their environment, and just be able to continue to independently move around and get out and do stuff.
Yeah. And that's something that I hadn't even thought about before, the social isolation aspect. I mean, I have thought about that, but the specific tool that you just mentioned, I hadn't thought about. But one thing that it brings to mind with social isolation is when we're surrounded by our community, we have our better mental health. Mm-hmm. We have a better life overall. And there's so many studies that show for anybody,
yeah,
that social isolation really depreciates your quality of life, and let alone when you have two communication disabilities. And what we say in our world is it's not blindness plus hearing loss, it's visual impairment multiplied by hearing impairment. So when we're looking at the actual effects of their life, it's not just adding the two together, but really multiplying them, because there are so many different aspects of every single part of that that really affects and impacts the quality of their life. And of course, how much more drive they're going to have, how much more independence they're going to have, how much success they're going to be able to have, and mental fortitude that they're going to be able to have in their life.
Yeah.
Can you share one of the challenges that you face as an audiologist working with people with dual sensory loss?
I think the biggest challenge is getting other audiologists to, make that shift in mindset and to be more creative with their solutions rather than go by the book. Because, these are the things that we're supposed to do, and there's a reason why we're supposed to do them, and I get that. But not everything works for everyone, and it's hard to break some of people's rotations that they do, because a lot of us are type A. We get the directions. We know that if someone has XYZ hearing loss, then we need to get them XYZ device. But sometimes XYZ device is not dual sensory impairment accessible, like a tiny little behind the ear with a tiny little rubber tip on the end that they can't see and change the parts and pieces of is not a good choice, regardless of whether that's the best auditory fit for them. And it's hard for some people to see that best practice isn't always best practice. And that's the most difficult part for me.
I think you just hit the nail on the head. It's not always best practice, because you have to individualize to the specific client, because we're not just teaching grammar in a school in a classroom. And even at that, you'd want to individualize as much as you can. But this is a really individualistic approach to working with people.
And it's somebody's life. So, they have to use that day in and day out to get around and to communicate. And they rely on this device to, talk to their loved ones. And if they have an emergency, they're going to need this device then. And if they don't know how to use it because they haven't been wearing it because it's not convenient for them, then that's not really, a good use of a hearing aid regardless. So, I mean, it all comes down to making something work for someone so that they can use it day in and day out. Maybe it's not perfect, but it's perfect for them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I want to honor your time and everybody else's time listening. This has been such a fantastic conversation. I can't wait to learn more from you at the symposium. We knew once we saw your presentation, we were like, oh, this is going to be good. And I don't know if you know this, but our community actually chooses the presentations.
Oh, really?
Yes. So that's why it takes our conference a little bit longer to reach out to you guys, because our community actually chooses them. And then the planning committee just kind of puts them in order. Like, we don't want too many cane skills in the same day. And like, this person's in Australia, so we should give them a later slot. Like, things like that, right?
Yeah.
So that's basically what we do. And we can also see the descriptions where they can't see all the descriptions and everything. And we have a little bit of like better knowledge. So we do a little bit of the final touches, but our community really wanted this from you. And
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so it got voted in, and we only have one slot per session time. We don't have like five different presentations going on at the same time. So everything that we do is so important, and we just want to have the best experience for them. So I want to thank you for putting in your application, for tracking us down, and really sharing your knowledge and expertise. One last question that I have for you, though,
Sure. Is
if you could give one piece of advice to our community to remind them just to take a step forward every day. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to know everything all the time. But as long as we take one step forward, we're doing pretty good. What would that piece of advice be?
I think that the one thing that I like to tell people is that whenever you are feeling frustrated by it, it's okay to set it down. And it's okay to give yourself a break. As long as you pick it back up again later and you try again, maybe an hour today, maybe 2 hours tomorrow, maybe 3 hours the next day, and just work your way up to it, you can get there. Even if it's frustrating, even if you don't like it, even if you feel like it's a waste of time, just try it. Keep pushing through and you'll see the benefits eventually.
Okay. You don't know how much that just means to me. On so many levels, there are so many things in teaching right now where I keep like trying to force it to make it happen. And I'm like, just need to take a break. I just need to put this down and walk away, go do something different and come back to it. And, you know, unplug it, plug it back in, and we'll see.
Definitely.
Sometimes that thing that we have to unplug is your brain. Oh man, that was so incredible. Thank you so much, Amber, for coming on this podcast. I cannot tell you how much fun this conversation was.
Of course, anytime.
Impactful VI specialists are changing the way that we do things. The old way is no longer acceptable, and we get to decide how we're going to make more impact without burning ourselves out. I'm so grateful that you've taken the time to listen to this podcast. I would love it if you would leave a review on Apple Podcasts, or if you even just came and hung out with us on social media. I'm at Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. You can find me at Allied Independence. I'd love to hear from you in my DMs. Let me know how you like this episode and anything that you took away from it. Until next week, just remember that all you have to do is take a step forward.